Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio joining us this afternoon. This portion of the program, of course, has been pre-recorded to accommodate Tom's schedule, sleeping schedule, as a matter of fact, in light of the fact that he's some 5 hours ahead of us in the according to the clock. And with that, Tom, good afternoon, or actually good evening to you.
Good afternoon, evening to you, Lockwood. Always a pleasure to speak with you.
Well, thank you very much. Pleasure is always ours as well, because I'm trying to figure out what's going on there in the European community, all the more reason why we enjoy these conversations. But, Tom, before we even get into that, let's talk about what's the weather like there in London. I'm always interested.
It's the best weather ever, and that's official.
Oh, good.
It's bright sunshine, temperature in the upper 60s. The best February weather we've ever had on record.
Okay, that's a statement, a positive statement for global climate change. We can handle that. Thank you very much, Tom. Just another endorsement to the outstanding work that we're doing here in the world. Tom Arms, LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. A little bit of a twist there. Okay, Tom, talking about twists. Of course, as we speak, the situation in Washington, D.C., Michael Cohen is apparently testifying as we speak. The Mueller investigation, we're anticipating a report probably next week at the rate we're going. What's the interest there in predominantly the U.K., but also in the European community?
Well, it's being broadcast live here, the Cohen testimony.
Hmm. Wow.
Or his statement. I think after the statement, it goes behind closed doors. But his statement is being broadcast live. And so there is a lot of interest. And, you know, there's a lot of interest. You know, everyone's been waiting a long time for the Mueller investigation. And so it will be big headlines when it comes out here, as it will be in the States.
Well, I can appreciate it being in the States. It's more fascinating that it is, for example, getting live coverage there in the UK. You know, I have to wonder, is this akin to, if you will, the coronation ceremonies? Of course, we watched with bated breath here, or, for example, the weddings of the royals. Are those, I mean, is that sort of the same?
I don't think it's getting quite those numbers.
Okay.
No, in fact, it's not getting those numbers. But,
all right.
You know, a lot of people are very interested. It is, you know, whatever you say about Trump, love him or loathe him, he's good copy.
He is definitely. Okay, we're getting positive reports here from the United Kingdom and Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, the other's topic, and I'm curious if it's getting much coverage, has to do with the campaigns in the United States, and that, of course, having to do with the Democrat, the lineup of candidates, now more and more just joining the fray, the campaigns. And, of course, most recently, the issues associated with free health care, free education, free everything, it seems. And I'm wondering, is that getting much coverage there in the European press?
It is starting to get coverage. You know, that there is a distinct, you know, recognizable shift to the left now.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, people here are saying, you know, it's going to be a test in the Democratic primary as to whether or not there is an appetite for this shift to the left. And if so, then it could be Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren. Or if instead it will be, you know, what's her name, Klobuchar,
mm-hmm.
You know, someone who would regarded as, say, more pragmatic,
right.
And center-left as opposed to left. It is being seen as a big election coming up in that respect.
You know, it's
and Trump is obviously, as he did in his State of the Union address, people are noticing that he is tacking his colors to the anti-socialist mast and
right.
and trying to draw parallels between Venezuela and Bernie Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
So it's being watched with considerable interest.
Well,
now,
the other aspect of this, Tom, we're going to, segue off onto a little bit of a sidecar here for a moment. And this has having to do with the influence of the events and elections in the United States on those in the European community. And you have contended for quite some time that President Trump was sort of the, I'll use the word icon, of the more populist movement, which has gained a lot of traction in the European community, there in Great Britain as well. Topic coming up in a few minutes, obviously, Brexit. And I'm wondering, the events here in the States, particularly in relationship to the Democrats and the growing interest in, well, you've used the term socialism, socialist movement in the country. Could that have...
Democratic socialism.
Okay. We'll punt on the word Democrat.
Look, there's a very distinct difference. I really want to stress this.
Okay.
Democratic socialism means a person's been democratically elected.
Okay.
Now, Maduro has not been democratically elected.
All right, wait. We're not going to get into Venezuela here for a moment, but the whole socialist movement.
No, we're talking about difference between socialism and democratic socialism.
Well, but the fact that socialism is a key word in this, I'm wondering, just for a moment here, Tom, not I don't want to get into the debate over forms of government, but I'm wondering, the growing interest here in the States, as you pointed out a few moments ago, does that have either an influence in the European community, or is this something that is sort of disconnected from the what's happening in the European community, because you've got a lot of populism still there as well?
Oh, yeah, no, it has a definite influence, you know. And, you know, it works the other way, too, I think, but to a lesser degree, because the United States is as a more powerful country,
mm-hmm.
a more powerful political unit, is not as dependent on other countries. But still, what happens in the UK and France, I'm certain, you know, makes people think. But even more so, what happens in the U.S., certainly makes people think here.
Okay, the question I'm wondering is, and we're going to get into the issue of the yellow vest here in a few minutes.
If a democratic socialist, if someone like Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren won the elections, it would be a boost for the center-left in Europe, yes.
Okay, thank you. That's what I was wondering. And then amidst all of this, does that pose a threat, do you think, to the populist movement in the European community? Events such as, for example, France's Yellow Vest movement, which, as you told us last week, has expanded beyond France.
The Yellow Vest movement is populist, but it's not. It's populist on the right and the left. So it has attracted the far left and it has attracted the far right. And they've simply just adopted it. And, you know, the two extremes of the political spectrum have adopted the Yellow Vest movement. So that's a bit difficult to tie down. I think that things like one would assume that the Democratic, a left-wing government in America, or a more left-wing government in America, would probably be more open to free trade and mm-hmm. less open to tariffs, more open to alliances, and less open to the unilateralism that's marked the Trump administration. And so that would require cooperation with their allies in Europe. And so all those things would have an impact on what's happening over here.
I think this is a big question here. And just who influences whom and how the influence is conveyed? So very interesting aspect.
It goes back and forth. But obviously, the United States is the senior partner.
Well, thank you very much for that observation. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. This portion of the program has been pre-recorded. Stay tuned for more. We're going to get into other issues. As a matter of fact, coming up in a few moments, we're going to talk about the events in the greater area of Great Britain, England, with Brexit here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Again, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule since he's some 5 hours ahead of us. And as this program is airing, it's going on towards, 11:30 p.m. Tom, let's talk here for a moment, a great deal of detail, to be exact, about the issues in the U.K. with Brexit. A lot happening. Seems that we may have come to a temporary conclusion. There is, of course, a deadline. It's sometime in March. When is that? March 28th?
12th of March.
12th of March. Oh.
Well, I mean, the final deadline is 29th of March.
Oh, 29th.
But she promised a vote by the 12th of March.
When you say she, I'm assuming you're
Theresa
talking...
Theresa May, the Prime Minister.
Theresa May, okay. All right, bring us up to date. This has been a very confusing story. Is it simplified?
Okay, two very big things that happened this week, and that is that the Prime Minister has said that if Parliament votes down her proposal again, that she will apply for or allow a vote on whether or not to extend the deadline. Okay, that's number one. Number two, and that is a big concession on her part. Number two is that Jeremy Corbyn has said that if Parliament votes down his proposals, which it probably would do, that he would support a move for a second referendum.
So now,
it looks as if we are moving towards, although not definite yet, a second referendum.
Okay, let's very quickly. What is it that Theresa May would like the Parliament to do?
Basically, to accept the agreement that it's already rejected
from the European Union.
Yeah.
Okay, and that was called a soft Brexit. Am I correct?
No. It was called a Brexit with the backstop.
Okay.
And basically, it said that Britain would remain within the customs union until they had sorted out the border between Northern Ireland and Ireland.
Okay. The issue there was predominantly based on the greatest sticking point is on trade. Am I correct on that?
The greatest sticking point there is on Ireland. They don't want to return to the troubles in Ireland.
Okay. Now, Jeremy Corbyn's, what was Jeremy Corbyn's proposal? What is his proposal?
Jeremy Corbyn's proposal is an incredibly soft Brexit, which basically we would abide by the customs regulations, remain in the customs union, and basically march alongside with all the regulations and everything else that the EU does. But we would not have any say and how those are constructed.
Hmm.
So we would be tied to EU regulations, but have no say in how they're done.
Now, I'm surprised by that. I thought Jeremy Corbyn was in favor of a hard Brexit.
Nope, Jeremy Corbyn is not in favor of a hard Brexit. Officially, his party campaigned to remain in the EU when we had the referendum.
Okay.
Jeremy Corbyn himself is personally not in favor of the European Union, never has been.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. All right, now with that said, let's talk about what next. I mean, if in fact there is no vote on, the vote on March 12th, if there's a vote on March 12th, you're anticipating that it'll be, at this point, a vote to provide a second referendum?
I think it will be a vote to extend the deadline.
Oh, is that all?
That's more or less agreed. Almost all the pundits are saying that the deadline has to be extended.
Okay.
It just cannot be done. And if it's extended, then it opens up the possibility of a second referendum because you've got to have a reason for extending it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you just can't keep extending it indefinitely and staying in this state of limbo.
But wait a second, Tom. Again, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio with us with viewpoints around the world. Quick question. I don't want to get too much in the weeds. We have so many other things to talk about, Tom. But if there is an extension, is the European Union willing to accept an extension? And what length of time of an extension are we talking about?
We're talking about 90 days to start with. And I think the European Union would be practical about it and say yes, but once again, they do have to agree to it, and they would not want to, as I said, extend it indefinitely. And so they would want to know that there's going to be a result to the extension, which is why I think the second referendum is becoming more and more likely. Because if the EU is told, we are extending it, we're going to debate a little bit further, we're going to need another extension, the EU will turn around and say, why? Are you going to have a second referendum or not?
I got you. Okay. The other question, of course, has to do with the impacts of all this, because you mentioned, as a matter of fact, last week, that there are four auto manufacturers that are in the process of preparing to leave the UK as a result of Brexit. Does this in any way dampen that that reaction, or are these companies still in the process of relocating?
They're still in the process of doing it, but when it came out that there was a possibility of an extension and a second referendum, the pound went up.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about trade here for a few moments, and I want to find out, in light of the issues of Brexit and also recent conversations with the president, we chatted about that, President Trump, earlier, the announcement that he is in the process of renegotiating the trade arrangements with China. I'm wondering, does that play any role, first and foremost, in Brexit? Does the relationship between the U.S. and China have any impact on Brexit, in light of the fact that the U.K. has been wanting to create closer relations with China as well, on trade matters, that is?
Not at this moment. It has. You're quite right. The British are one of the few countries which are talking quite a bit to Huawei, and they are certainly prepared to make more concessions to win Chinese trade than other countries. But there's nothing much that can really be done until Brexit is decided.
Okay.
The Chinese don't know what the terms of reference are going to be, and neither do the British.
Mm. By the way, has this created a sense of calm in the UK by any chance?
No. Exact opposite.
Really?
I mean, the country is in a total uncertainty everywhere. Nobody knows what is going to happen. It's just total uncertainty. House prices are starting to fall, and that is unusual, because this is a small country, mm-hmm. where there's a housing shortage. There's a perpetual housing shortage here.
Right.
Which means house prices should be always edging up, but they're starting to fall.
All right.
Because people just don't know what to do.
Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, I mentioned a moment ago trade talks with China and president's negotiations, which, by the way, seem to be working. What's the opinion of the European community on that?
They're keeping a low profile on it, but they certainly do want them to work.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want the Chinese economy to be hurt. The Chinese economy is an engine for the world economy. As long as the Chinese economy is growing, then the world economy is growing.
But right now, the Chinese economy is somewhat diminished. Compared to other countries,
it's diminished.
No.
It's slowed down.
Yes, but
the main reason it's slowed down is because of tariffs and uncertainty over trade with the United States. When you have the two major trading nations, debating how much in tariffs to slap on each other's goods,
mm-hmm.
then that's going to have an effect on the world economy.
Well, no question about that. And, of course, it's been a concern here in the States as well. But what's the opinion of the president in these negotiations?
He's not popular.
Oh, I cannot imagine that. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of lookaheadnews.com. And as always, to remind you, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule. Tom, we chatted a moment ago about China, President Trump. The other big story today, and that has to do with the summit in Hanoi with President Kim Jong-un of North Korea. And, you know, it's interesting, Tom, 2 years ago, these names would not have rolled off our lips as easily as they are now, because obviously these world leaders are becoming more and more front stage, if you will. But the conversations, of course, generated around the summit underway right now in North Korea. What is the view, first and foremost, about that in the European community?
Well, they think that the first summit was a big win for Kim, that Trump got virtually nothing out of it, and that Kim got recognition, and that he hasn't really dismantled anything. And we're watching this second summit with great interest to see whether or not President Trump manages to get some sort of denuclearization out of Kim. And that if he doesn't, it just won't look very good at all.
One of the other aspects of this is, one, the conclusion of the war with Korea, but two, the relationships between North Korea and South Korea, which I think have been a positive out of the initial summit. Do folks not agree with that?
Yes, they do, but they see it more as the efforts between the new South Korean president, or more as a result of the effort of the new South Korean president than of President Trump.
But these are efforts that would have not been successful had it not been for President Trump basically opening the door.
Some people argue that the South Korean president opened the door to Trump. It's all interconnected, obviously. Yeah. I go back to my hip thigh-bone theory of the world. Anyway, they need to see some sort of movement on the part of Kim, and it'd be interesting to see what comes out. Will President Trump have to give some movement on sanctions
We'll have to see.
Kim gives movement on denuclearization, or will it have to be done in tandem? People are watching with bated breath.
Okay, I just was curious. All right, let's move on to other items. And I want to stick with some military issues, and let's start with India and Pakistan, and of course you've got the elections in India as well, but the events of the past week, I'm using that broadly, well, that's not true, several weeks, we've had the terrorist bombing of some, I think, 41 Indian police officers.
Paramilitaries.
You've now had, I think, two airplane attacks or attacks on Pakistan by Indian aircraft. I'm wondering, how serious is this event in India and Pakistan?
Well, let's not forget that both countries each have about 100 nuclear warheads.
Do you think that that's even a potential, that they would use nuclear weaponry?
You know, if you've got them, there's always that fear, isn't there?
All right.
It's always hanging over you like the Damocles sword.
Okay.
And you just never know. Just because they've never been used before doesn't mean they never will be.
All right. Continue on. Yeah. But how important is this event in Pakistan and India? How is that being reported in the European community?
It's being reported extensively.
Is there a threat?
Now, this is over the administration of Kashmir, mm-hmm. Jammu Kashmir, which sits on the border between China, India and Pakistan,
right,
and has been disputed by all three countries,
right,
but mainly by India and Pakistan ever since partition in 1947, and they've gone to war, India and Pakistan, over it twice,
right,
and before they had nuclear weapons. It's a really touchy thing. They have been having off and on sporadic attacks and terrorist attacks back and forth. The country is divided into three different administrative units, mm-hmm. Run by Chinese, Indian, and Pakistan administrators. But the Indian and Pakistan lay claim to all of it. And, of course, hanging over it all is that in about 6 weeks to 2 months, there's going to be elections in India.
Right.
And so Narendra Modi has to be seen as a strong man, because basically he is there as a Hindu nationalist prime minister, and Hindu nationalists are opposed to Muslims.
Now, here's the question for you, because we want to move on to other items. Is there a feeling that India is precipitating these this violence in an effort for political purposes to help the current President Modi on his reelection? Is there some sense there, or is this seen as just a surprise attack, and he's now having to respond to it?
It depends on who you ask.
Okay, all right. So yeah, I think this is an important issue, and of course,
it is an important issue, and it's very tempting to think that he's doing it for electioneering purposes. But on the other hand, it's a very dangerous game to play.
Understood. All right. Speaking of dangerous games, let's look to Venezuela. How is that being covered? Of course, that is a topic of discussion here in the States as well, because the U.S. has attempted to provide humanitarian aid only to be denied access by President Maduro.
Yeah, it's being covered in great detail here. I must tell you the story. This is a personal story about America's special emissary, Elliot Abrams. Just goes to character. I'm married to a former American diplomat whose name is Eileen Riley, and her last job was the human rights officer for Africa. And she worked under Elliot Abrams, who then was the assistant secretary of state for human rights. And Elliot came to London and gave a talk at the Royal Institute for International Affairs. And I arranged, because I'm a member of the Institute, to go along and go to the cocktail reception for him, and went up and introduced myself to him as the fiancé of Eileen Riley, one of his colleagues. And I held out my hand, and he looked at it. He put his hands behind his back, and he turned around.
And for what reason?
He would not speak to me.
Why not?
I was a journalist. He hates all journalists. I was taking away a member of his staff.
Oh, okay. Well, you were stealing one of his staff. I can appreciate that. All right, that's a compliment to your wife.
To my mind, it goes to character. He has a bad reputation in Washington.
Be that as it is, let's talk about Venezuela, less about the issues associated with your experience.
It's important to talk about the character of the person who's going to be representing the United States.
In light of the events taking place and the activities of President Maduro, we need a hard person with good, solid character to defend the benefits of the humanitarian needs there. Question for you. How is the Venezuelan reaction of the U.S. being perceived in light of the efforts on the part of the president? Good, bad, or indifferent?
Good.
Okay.
Everyone supports President Trump. I mean,
wonderful.
That is, with the exception of countries like Turkey and Russia, they generally think that he's doing
wonderful.
It should be done.
Well, it's nice to hear a positive remark about the president.
Up to the point, whether or not, and his urging the military to come over to support Guaido. Is probably exactly the right way to do it.
Will the European community step in if asked to participate?
I don't know.
Okay. All right. I want to move on to other items, because I do want to talk about Iran here. But I want to go first to a topic, Diego Garcia. Tell us a little something about that, if you will.
Okay. Well, the International Court of Justice has instructed the British government to return Diego Garcia to Mauritius. It broke the Diego Garcia, which is an archipelago in the Indian Ocean, away from Mauritius when Mauritius became independent, and kept it for itself, and then leased it to the U.S. Department of Defense. Diego Garcia is one of your most important military staging posts.
Right in the middle of the Indian Ocean, yes. Question for you is
right in the middle of the Indian Ocean, and you could lose it.
Okay, and my question to you is the European Court or the World Court?
The International Court, the World Court.
Okay, and what's the future?
It's non-binding.
Right.
But it has a lot of moral authority.
Okay.
And so it could, it could make life difficult. Diego Garcia is absolutely vital to your defense interest, security interest in the Middle East,
right,
in the Indian subcontinent, and on the Pacific Rim.
You said a few moments ago it's leased. Would the lease remain by any chance if it's returned to Mauritius?
The initial lease was for 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's just been renewed for another 20.
Okay. Let's move on to another item very quickly since we're talking about the Middle East. Let's talk about Iran foreign minister resigning. And there's a lot of question about this. Why?
Yeah, well, Rouhani has now just come over. He's rejected his resignation.
Okay.
Now, he resigned because he felt a failure. He felt a failure because the Iran nuclear deal has fallen through, and he was a key person in negotiating that deal.
Mm-hmm.
He is seen as a moderate. He's under attack from the hardliners. Rouhani needs him in place to basically deflect the hardliners away from him.
Mm-hmm.
So if he is forced to resign, if he does get his resignation through, that is a victory for the hardliners.
Okay. What is the future of Iran, by the way? I mean, in light of the fact that you've got a growing populist movement, I would argue, in Iran, is that going to have an influence politically at some point?
Well, unlikely, because it is a theocracy.
It is a theocracy.
It is a theocracy. So the candidates all have to be approved of,
okay,
by the Ayatollahs.
All right.
And they're not going to approve. An anti-Islamic or, populist candidate.
I wondered about that. Okay, we're going to take a quick break on this. We've got Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio, with us here this afternoon on Viewpoints Around the World.
Head Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. This is always the fun part of the conversation, and this is one where I can at times even come to the point of agreeing with him. But before we get into that fun time, Rocket Man cocktail I want to hear about, in light of the events we were chatting a few moments ago about the events in the Middle East, Afghan peace talks. What's the future of the Afghan peace talks in that you understand?
Well, they're looking pretty good. The American representative, or American ambassador, who's born in Afghan,
mm-hmm,
and by all accounts is absolutely first class,
mm-hmm,
is having talks with Taliban in Doha. And the talks are going well. There is one big snag,
mm-hmm,
one huge snag, and that is the Americans, the Trump administration, they want to bring in the Afghan government, which they recognize. And the Taliban refuses to speak to them because they say they are American puppets.
Right.
So they don't want to talk to the monkey. They just want to talk to the organ grinder.
The other aspect of this, by the way, Russia is very interested in this as well as China. Am I correct?
Oh, yes. Well, okay. Obviously, everyone's, they've all got a watching brief, and they're all watching it very carefully.
Well, the fact that we've got now peace negotiations or conversations, shouldn't they say call that negotiations at this point, is that giving some sense of calm to the region of the world? Or is there because we've chatted about India and Pakistan, by the way, which are nearby neighbors of Afghanistan. It just seems that there's constant turmoil in that portion of the world. Real quickly, before we get to the Rocket Man, is there any sense that maybe that portion of the world may someday calm down?
There's hope.
Okay, there's hope in everything.
That's all we could say.
Okay.
There's a flicker of hope.
Okay. Let's talk now about the Rocket Man cocktail.
Yeah, in Hanoi. The bars are going wild. They've got Kim Ale, which they've launched, and they've got the Rocket Man cocktail, which is soju, which is a local liqueur, bourbon, pineapple juice, vanilla, and grenadine. And it's described as strong as Trump. It's sweet. It's also very fiery. When you drink it, it tastes really hot at first, but it ends with sweetness.
Oh, so that's in honor of President Trump, I guess, huh?
That's in honor of President Trump,
yeah. Yeah, Rocket Man cocktail. All right. Well, you heard it first here on Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com. Tom, do you think this cocktail, or by the way, do you know what's in the Kim Ale by any chance?
Have no idea.
Oh, that's unfortunate. But do you think the Rocket Man cocktail, what
are these? Water, yeast.
Okay, yes. Now, Rocket Man cocktail, one more time, for people who are listening to this, they're writing these details down. What are the ingredients again?
Okay, a Vietnamese spirit or liqueur called soju, S-O-J-U, bourbon, pineapple, vanilla, and grenadine.
All right.
Yeah.
We'll have
shaken,
to...
Shaken, not stirred.
Understood. As you would expect from a Brit. All right, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us on the details and the ingredients for Rocket Man cocktail. Tom, as always, thank you very much for being with us.
It's a pleasure, as always.
Viewpoints around the world here on the talk station, FM 107, AM 1240.
Ahead Radio is a production of the Talk Station.